Here last week, you missed the introduction. I can't replay it. You're going to have to listen to it if you want to hear it. But I think it has value to what we're trying to accomplish over the next little bit. So I know this looks weird that I'm bringing this chair up here, but there's a purpose behind that. First of all, let me say, Asher, is this your first Sunday here since you were baptized? So for those of you who weren't here a few weeks ago on a Wednesday night, Asher gave his life to Christ through baptism, and then you got sick, right? And so just want to, for everybody to know that, who wasn't there on that Wednesday night. So glad to have you, Asher, this morning, and congratulations on your decision to follow Christ. So want to bring that out. So as I mentioned last week, we're going to start diving into this Sermon on the Mount. One of the things I want you to be thinking about as we study through some of this stuff is, did he really say that? I really kind of want that to resonate in your mind. As we go through some of these teachings, as Jesus teaches, so oftentimes we have a tendency to excuse a little bit of what he teaches, or soften it, or dumb it down, or water it down just a little bit. And what I really want you to ask yourself as we go through this study is, did he really say that? Was he talking to me? Should I be doing this? Should I be living this way? As I mentioned last week, when Jesus reveals something about himself, which honestly in the Sermon on the Mount, he's revealing a lot of his nature, of who he is. And in the midst of revealing his nature, he's equally reminding you what should be true about you. And so as we kind of dive into the Sermon on the Mount, I want you to understand that so many of Jesus' teachings, particularly in the time, were just backwards, if you will. They were upside down. They didn't make sense oftentimes. And so as we kind of dig into the Beatitudes this week, I want you guys to understand that I'm going to probably give a presentation of these that may be different than you've ever heard before. Now, I did give homework last week. Who did the homework? Who read the Sermon on the Mount? As you read it, did you say, did he really say that? Because I hope that stood out to you, that you said, like, wow, that seems... So my challenge for y'all who weren't here last week, my challenge for y'all is to read this every week. Read the sermon, the three chapters of the Sermon on the Mount. Read it every week. Allow it to start becoming part of who you are. And the best way I know to do that is to just keep regurgitating it. Because this is like the greatest hits, if you will. Jesus had already been going from community to community and teaching these things. So this is kind of like a synopsis of what he's already been telling people. As people follow him around, that he's been communicating this stuff over and over. I mentioned last week how sometimes I'll leave church on a Sunday morning and look at Lana and go, man, that sermon's going to really be good the next time I preach it. Like, it kind of just wasn't spot on, but man, I know I could do it better, right? And so as you think about the Sermon on the Mount, I can envision Jesus kind of going into a community and teaching and walking out and sitting down with Matthew and going, dude, like, I think I could really bring it home. And I think this is the culmination of bringing it home. All right? And so as we go into this Sermon on the Mount, as you see this introduction, you know, the Sermon on the Mount was heard by many that day. All right? As Jesus is teaching, many people hear this sermon. And through society, generationally, since this was spoken, many people have heard this. Not just people who have devoted and given their life to Christ, but many who haven't. Still view this as a good teaching. But what I want you to understand is that Jesus' intention for this sermon wasn't necessarily for the multitudes, although the multitudes heard it. Jesus' intention for this sermon was for his followers. And we know that based on his posturing at the very beginning of Matthew chapter 5. Seeing the crowds, right? He went up onto the mountain. And oftentimes we see Jesus do this. Like when he sees the crowd, sometimes he separates himself a little bit, right? He pulls back. He goes to the other side of the sea. He's trying to create a little bit of space. I am claustrophobic. That is a weird thing for me to confess to y'all, but Lana would agree that I do not like tight spaces. All right? We went to the basketball game the other night against Bayfield against Ignacio. And Lana's been helping with the girls program. I've been kind of sitting behind the bench. And that's been a good spot to sit. That's the visitor side, I know. But right behind the bench, there doesn't seem to be a lot of fans. But against Ignacio travels well, right? And so as the game progressed, more and more people start moving in. And I'm like, ah. So I start bouncing around a little bit because I just don't like tight spaces, right? And so I kind of see Jesus going, I need some room. I need a little bit of room, right? And so he goes out onto the boat oftentimes. You see this in Scripture multiple times, how Jesus kind of pulls back a little bit. Now, but in the pulling back, what I want you to see is that though he sees the crowd, he went up onto the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. I love that image of Jesus, all right? That's why I brought this, because now I get to sit down, which means I can talk a lot longer, right? Because I'm on y'all's level now, right? I love that this isn't him standing up on this great mountain and all of a sudden his voice is just reverberating. You know, anybody ever watched the fireworks in Silverton? I love watching the fireworks in Silverton. It's one of my favorite things to do on the 4th of July. Because, man, when it goes boom, it doesn't just go boom once. It echoes in the canyon. And it's amazing, an amazing sound. And so oftentimes when I think about the Sermon on the Mount, I think about that. It's like Jesus standing up on this mountain and he speaks and it's just reverberating off of the canyon walls. No, he got down on a high level with his followers. He's talking to them. A lot of people are hearing it. But what I want you to understand is Jesus is talking to the people who have already made a decision to follow him. This isn't a gospel message here. It's a life message. And so as we get into the Beatitudes, as it has been labeled over the years, there's a word that's used in each of them. It's blessed. Now, this is a commercial, right? I like giving commercial breaks. This is a commercial. This is an advertisement for next week. I'm not going to be here next week. But one thing I know about my son Hunter is he's a nerd. He doesn't look like it. He pretends he's not. But he really is. And he loves picking apart words. Now, the fun part for this series for me is that Hunter and I have kind of been studying it a little bit together. And this week I went to Hunter and I said, hey, I know what you need to preach on next week. That's dad telling son what to do. I want you to preach on the word blessed. Blessed. So next week's sermon, I think, unless he decides to not listen to me, which he often does, is going to be about this word blessed, to better have a better understanding of not just this word in the context of the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, but just a better spiritual understanding of the word. And so I want to challenge y'all to be here next week. It'll be great. But bring a pencil. You might need it. All right? And so he starts with the Beatitudes by saying, and he opened, verse 2, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. I wanted to kind of, even though we're going to break it down, I wanted to read it just kind of all together. And y'all to be able to hear it as the followers that were close to Jesus sat down that day and heard him speak these words. Speak these words that were controversial. They're upside down in modern thinking. They were upside down in their time. All right, and so I want to start by starting at the back and then going back to the front. At the end of the Sermon on the Mount, I think it's important to kind of to read this. It's right at the end of Matthew chapter 7. verse 28, and when Jesus finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished. So this isn't just the people that are sitting nestled in right around him, but the crowds were astonished at his teachings. For he was teaching them as one who had authority, not as their scribes. See, because a scribe taught what had predated their existence. They're looking and opening up the Torah. They're looking at different the law and they're interpreting it. Jesus is not speaking as one who is interpreting anything. He's speaking as a prophet. He is speaking as someone who is a messenger of God. He is not giving something some meaning. He is creating new meaning. And so as he's speaking, people are amazed. But what I need us to understand, and that's the reason why I start kind of at the back here, what I need us to understand is that in context of the time period, what's going on in society, these people understood what he's teaching. It was clear to them. It made sense to them. Now, when we translate it out generations down the road, all of a sudden we start infusing our modern society into this teaching, and sometimes I think we get a little bit of a different reading of the Beatitudes. So back to the first one. I'm going to break these down over the course of several weeks, not next week, but we'll come back to it in 2 weeks. I'm going to break these down into three parts. I think these three parts are super important for us to genuinely understand. As Jesus is speaking, he is giving a process, if you will, particularly with the Beatitudes. And so I want to break this down into three different parts. The first part, which we're going to talk about today, deals with the first three Beatitudes, the first three blessings, okay? And those are going to be a realization. So if you're taking notes, write realization down, because this is going to be where Jesus finds them. And then he's going to take them from a realization in the first three to the next three, and those are going to speak about the transformation. And after we go from realizing to being transformed, then it's going to be the reaction. Because you have become this new person who sees life the way I see it, Jesus says, this is going to be the reaction of the communities that you're surrounded by. Don't be surprised by the reaction that you will receive. So these blessings, and as Hunter talks about blessing next week, blessing is a God thing. God's the only one that can bless. I can ask God to bless you, right? But I'm making a request of the only one who can bless you. And so as we think through these things, let us keep that in mind. The first one, blessed are the poor in spirit. One of the commentators that Hunter and I have been listening to changes that word blessed to the good life. All right, the good life. And so it would read more like the good life, those who have the good life are poor in spirit. But what I want you to understand is I have always read this text from a wrong perspective. Anybody else read it like I used to read it, which is blessed are the poor in spirit? How does that sound like a blessing? Does anybody else read it like that? Like, blessed are the poor in spirit. Well, that just doesn't make sense at all. What I want you to understand is the blessing is the second part of that verse. That was an aha moment for me. And so as we turn to Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 3, let's read the first one, understanding that the blessing is the second part of that verse. Let me slide back over there. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Here's the blessing. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The blessing is, these people theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now that sounds better, doesn't it? Does anybody want that? I want that. And so what does it mean, poor in spirit? I've heard this and spent quite a bit of time kind of analyzing this. And I appreciated the Bible Project's breakdown of these words. Spirit would be ruach. We've heard that. Yeah, I've mentioned that word before. I know Hunter's mentioned that word before. It's ruach. It's breath. It's energy. It's the life. All right? And then poor would be the quality of that life. And so he's saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, their energy. Blessed are the people who don't have power. Blessed are the powerless. And so I say it that way because I want you to understand that we in our modern society very much translate this out solely as a religious concept. But again, that's sucking it out of its original context. Who this originally was spoken to are people who are kind of slaves in what used to be their own land. I want you to hear that for a second. They're living in the land that was given to them by God, but they're not in charge. They're under a rule. And so that the land that they may be farming still is land that they're cultivating and they're working, that their great-grandpappy worked because he owned the land. They no longer own the land. Now they're working it for a different landowner. And people who are fishermen, they're fishing, but half of their fish are going towards taxation. These people are poor. Economically, they are also poor. So I want you to understand when Jesus is speaking in context of what's going on right now in this area of society, in Jesus' lifetime, these people aren't just poor in spirit, they're economically poor as well. But one of the things that I love about this is saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who lack power, because theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Everything that Jesus is talking about is all about the kingdom. He's been preaching about the kingdom from town to town to town. He's talking about, hey, the kingdom is at hand. The kingdom is near. This different idea is here. And what I want you to understand is people with great power don't understand teachings that come from a powerless place. But people who don't have anything. One of the hardest things to teach in life, I've learned. It wasn't hard for me to learn. You know, Mom and Dad had 4 kids, and I never felt like I was without a meal. But I also never felt like I had excess. But I never felt like I was without. But there are those among you here that feel like you've lived life without. If you've lived life without, how much appreciation do you have when you have something? Well, y'all sleeping right now? How much appreciation do you have if you've been without to actually have? Hunter did an almost 3-day fast until his vision started blurring. But how much did you appreciate food when you didn't have any food? It was hard when Lana and I became fairly financially successful and we could kind of do what we wanted to do, kind of, within reason and respect, to still teach my boys what it's like to have without. And so Jesus is talking about the kingdom, and who better to receive the kingdom than somebody that understands a lack? They're living in a place where they feel lack. They're living in a place where they feel without. They're living in this terrible time, not just in spirit, but in an economic place. They're living without. And so when Jesus speaks to have, guess who's hearing it? The people who can hear it the best. And the people who can hear that message the best are the people that understand lack. They understand the word poor. They understand that. And so when he speaks of kingdom, and there's coming a time, the kingdom is near, and these people will inherit the kingdom, it's probably because these people are going to see the kingdom. People with power do not see things that are controversial to their own power. But somebody who is poor, somebody who lacks the proper energy. I actually wrote these down because I think they're beneficial. to understand that the pour is describing a quality of the ruach, of the breath. All right, so he's describing the spirit. These guys are kind of hip that Hunter and I listen to. They're going to say vibe. All right, so it's your vibe. And if I have this vibe about me, does anybody know what that means? Just younger people are nodding their head. And Chloe raised their hand. Appreciate that. This energy. When you're around somebody, do you feel that sometimes? Like when I'm around Chloe, she's kind of happy. Would anybody disagree with me? So when you're around Chloe, what are you naturally? Happy. Why? That's her vibe. That's her energy, right? That's her energy. And so the word pour is describing a quality of the energy, of the breath, of the life. And so different examples that these guys talked about is Job chapter 7, verse 11. We know it's Job's story. It says, therefore I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in anguish of my spirit. Anguish is the quality of his spirit. And Genesis chapter 26 and verse 35, talking about Isaac, they made Elon and Hittite, and they made my life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. They made life bitter. Their spirit was bitter. The quality of their spirit was bitter. How many of y'all have a spirit within you? Wow. Everybody, in case you didn't know, everybody should raise their hand right now. All right? Because you have a spirit within you. And what would be the quality that would describe the spirit in you? That's what he's talking about. He's describing the spirit that will receive the kingdom the best. Those who lack power. Those who lack will receive it the best. Why? Because they understand life of lacking. See, you don't appreciate. I used to get frustrated by this statement. I used to get frustrated by people saying, oh, he came to Christ much later in life. Anybody raised in the church get irritated with that statement? That's me. I'm like, well, how is that possible? Because they understand life without him. They understand what life looks like without him, the hopelessness of that life. They understand lack. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are those who grieve. Now that's an interesting one to me. And for lack of just not going too terribly long today, I want us to see that grief is something that is natural. But you don't grieve unless there's genuine loss. Now, for some of us, that's just very intimate. And it's on a very personal level. When my dad passed away, I grieved. There's been times in my life that I have grieved. And it's easy to get stuck in that grief, right? And not come out of that grief. But Jesus is saying those who grieve, they also are experiencing, it's very similar to the first one. I need you to hear this, all right? It's very similar to the first one. They're going through loss. They recognize loss. People in power oftentimes do not recognize loss. Why does the billionaires not care if they're taxed? Because they're still billionaires. They don't really feel it like you might feel it. And so as we grieve, I want you to understand that he's not just talking about grieving at the level of personal family. He's talking about grieving for a people without Jesus. Grieving for people, caring enough that they lack this. And the best way I heard it, and these guys, I think it was in the commentary to follow on this, but the best way I heard this, is a quote from Queen Elizabeth II. And to me, this kind of brought this one home for me. Grief is the price we pay for loving. Grief is the price we pay for loving. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who grieve because they love. People who don't love don't grieve. Blessed is those who love well enough to grieve at loss. And here's the blessing. They will be comforted. See, oftentimes life and society, especially in modern society, there's a lot of people out there grieving. Maybe we might even call it today depressed. And they stay in that stagnant place of life because they don't understand that in Jesus there is comfort. We point to a lot of remedies for grief. But Jesus is saying, in my kingdom, in the kingdom that's at hand, those who grieve because they love well, they're going to find comfort. What a blessing that is. And the third, that is a realization of status in life. Poor in spirit, those who mourn, and meek. Now, Hunter and I both struggled with this one. Because the natural translation for meek is to gentle. Maybe some of y'all's Bibles, does your Bible say gentle? Some translations say gentle. Some say humble. Blessed are the humble. That kind of makes sense a little bit. But if we're going to stay with a theory, right, that Jesus is not just, he's talking into this time period too. I'm going to translate meek the way they did, which is different, but relevant. It would be afflicted or unimportant. Afflicted. Blessed are the afflicted. So let's read it with that word. Blessed are the afflicted, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the unimportant, for they shall inherit the earth. Again, keeping in context with when Jesus spoke these words and to who his first audience was in these words. And I started with that a little bit earlier, and I said, hey, these are people that are working land that used to belong to their family, but they're not working it anymore. Land was something, if you had land, you had something. That's really not a lot different than today, is it? We have homeowners and we have renters. What does every renter want to be? A homeowner. What does every homeowner not want to be? A renter. They were owners, now they're renters. They're worse than renters. They're just workers. They're just working the land that their ancestors used to own. And so when he's speaking to them, and I want you to hear this, that what's the blessing? You will inherit the land. How might that sound to somebody who's a farmer on a land that they used to own? Oh, you're saying we're gonna inherit this? Inheritance was a huge thing in biblical times, right? Inheritance was valued. And so when Jesus says you're going to inherit the earth, he's saying, listen, this guy, the meek, the afflicted, the unimportant, that has no status, he's a renter, he and used to be a landowner, he's coming back into a place of blessing where he's going to inherit the earth. Ooh, who's excited about that? Not the guy in power. Because what is he here? Fixing to take something away from me. But to the powerless, to the unimportant, to the one grieving because they understand loss and lack, this means something. This means something. Here's my struggle. I'm going to end with this morning. I know this is going to be a different kind of sermon series, all right? And I hope that there's some takeaway. I do want y'all to understand something important. I've been listening to stuff for hours and reading and processing. I'm not expecting anybody to just go, oh, that made perfect sense. Thanks, Kevin. Spend some time contemplating and meditating on this stuff. If you have questions, I pray that you will ask them. my struggle with this interpretation is I have heard this interpretation before, and I rejected it. Let me tell you why I rejected this interpretation of the third blessing. If I read it as blessed are those, blessed are the afflicted, for they shall inherit the earth. If I read that and just transpose into modern society, afflicted, here's what comes out of that. Homosexuals are afflicted. Gays are afflicted. Transgender are afflicted. All of these groups transpose themselves into this afflicted place. And when they do that, they're saying, we're actually more in line with God because we're afflicted, looked down upon. And I've heard that as a justification for a lot of lifestyles in today's society. That Jesus is with the afflicted. And that's true here. But not how we're taking it. Because if you finish the text, y'all have heard me say cross-stitch scripture, right? Because if we're going to cross-stitch and suck one thing out and make a religion out of it, we're probably missing a lot. Because not too far further down, it says the ninth blessing is for those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. These are afflicted people based on the times of society. These are not afflicted because the way we've translated that out is not being afflicted for the sake of righteousness. It's afflicted for our status or how we've chosen to live our life. There's a difference. What Jesus is talking about in the Sermon on the Mount is these afflictions have come to you by default. You had no choice in these afflictions. But I'm going to give you what the reward by surviving and living in the midst of these travesties of life. But if you choose a life of sinfulness, that doesn't bond you to me because I'm with the afflicted. I think we have to be very careful there. And I think religious circles, crazy as that sounds, have taken verses like this and said, we're in God's care and compassion because we are afflicted. And that is not what this is saying. So I want to challenge y'all not to fall into that trap. This morning I want to challenge y'all that if we're going to understand the blessings of God, if we're going to understand the teachings of Jesus when he sat down with his followers and saying, listen, it's an upside down world. My kingdom looks different than the kingdom you've been living in. My kingdom appreciates a person who appreciates something because they've not had it, because they've lacked in it, because they've not felt the support of it. My kingdom appreciates the grieving aspect of life because that means you loved. My kingdom understands life and the energy is dependent upon me. Blessed are those who are powerless, because I am power. And anybody who's ever been powerless can recognize true power. Matthew chapter 7, they were amazed at his teachings because he spoke as one with authority. They recognized his power. Powerless people recognize power. Powerful people try to dumb down anything other than their own power. God is saying, look, I am life. Let your ruach be me. Let your describer of the energy that's in you come from me. And the more you do that, the more you will see me. The more you do that, the more you will see my kingdom. The more you do that, the more you'll appreciate. The more you do that, the more you'll inherit. My challenge for y'all this morning, as we go through the Beatitudes, is to see the blessing in them. Not scratch your head and wonder, why in the world did he say that? But see the blessing, because the blessing is the kingdom. First one, kingdom of heaven. Second one, being comforted. Third, inherit the earth. Those are the blessings in the first three. The first three also are indicative of a realization of status in life as we come into relationship with Jesus Christ. So as we recognize who we are in separation from Him, let us also equally remember who we are in union with Him. Because in union with Him, the blessing's received. If there is anything that we can do for you this morning, I'd ask that you come as Mark leads us in an invitation song.